Chapter 19. When you wanted to know more about the Jash Corporation, there was really only one person to ask. Zidorov put in a Vox request to Glovak before leaving the bar. It took a while to get an answer back, probably because Clev Glovak didn't see much reason to associate with lower-grade probators, having been spoiled by all that corporate hospitality. In the end, a response did return, telling Zidorov to come to the Volodyak Private Members Club if he really couldn't wait until next time they were both in the Bastion. The drive wasn't far. The towers in the sub-district were very much like the ones he'd seen in the Hollowfield, straight-edged and well-maintained, with fearsome security presences on every corner. There were no tatty rows of food stalls and precious fume in a storeroom floats and processions. This was the home of money in Yorgyina, the place where the slate was made, bent and spent. Even the sidewalks looked reasonably clean, though the constant hammer of rain no doubt did much to sluice them down. Glovak had given him the lock ref for a particularly upmarket tower, one with an armour glass frontage that glinted even in the grey drabness of the late afternoon. The entrance lobby was lined with mirrors, the floors highly varnished, which gave the strange impression of walking in and through something transparent like water. It smelled rather intensely of personal body fragrances, the kind of sprays that they laced with attraction pheromones, no doubt exuded from the dozens of people milling around amid the reflections and the crystal fountains. The effect became rather overwhelming after just a few moments in their presence. Zidorov found himself wanting to stuff a cloth into his mouth. Everyone he saw looked young. They were all perfect, with their smooth skin and liquid eyes. The shades of pigment on display were bewildering. Ochre, amber, salmon pink, lime green, framed with silver hair or gold-plated headdresses. Very few of them noticed him. If they did, their eyes only alighted briefly on his travel-worn clothes, his paunch, his lined and stubbled face. They didn't scorn that, just stared through it entirely. For them, for these people, the world outside their bubble didn't so much appall them as fail to exist. They walked past it, over it, through it, never once feeling obliged to engage with it. Zidorov went up to a reception desk stacked with real plants sitting in glittering urns containing real water. The crew manning it were all as beautiful as those they served, though the effect was slightly less perfect, a scar from surgery here, a slight puckering from imperfect rejuve there. For all he knew, these people were older than he was, and yet they looked younger than Naxi. "I've an appointment with Probator Senioris Glovak," he told one of them, after struggling to catch an eye for a little while. "He's expecting me." The mention of the name was enough. Calls were made, ushers were summoned, a servo skull swept down from its roost and took pics of him for the security record. He was shown along a gold-edged corridor and gently guided into a glass-fronted elevator. This whispered up the floors until they reached an identical corridor on a higher level, this time with sweeping panoramic views of the city from floor-to-ceiling windows set at the far end. Zidorov smelt caffeine and sweetmeats, plus the same overpowering melange of body fragrances. The chambers ahead were full of low chatter, of clusters of well-dressed people speaking in confidential voices. He was shown to where Glovak had installed himself, a real leather armchair overlooking the view north, which was mostly of messy snarls of cloud. The probator was dressed as finely as everyone else and wore a thick cream suit with grey piping. He had a half-finished cup of caffeine in front of him and looked supremely relaxed. Zidorov sat opposite him, was asked if he wanted anything to drink. When he declined, the usher glided away, slipping through the soft patter of voices like an eel in a fast current. Glovak had done well from his position. Getting into the Slate Crime Division was a nice number, particularly if you had little intention of investigating and more interest in profiting. He looked sleek, well-fed, well-groomed, with neat salt-and-pepper hair swept back from a resculpted jawline.
"You look tired, Augusto," he said, reaching for his caffeine.
"Thanks, you look immaculate."
"Got to keep up appearances. How's Milijah?"
Glovak was so much more accomplished than the run-of-the-mill probators. He was polite, solicitous, good with names. He probably even remembered birthdays.
"She's fine," said Zidorov. "Thanks for asking. But I'm guessing you're here to ask me more about the Tereshovas."
"Wrong company. I need to know about Jash. Are they still looking after you well?"
Glovak shrugged. I can't complain, but now the rain's come, I don't get out to the coast so much. They have a lovely place up by the cliffs at Stroyer. You should get them to send you there sometime. I can put a word in. Zidorov smiled dryly. Somehow I doubt I'd be welcome. Listen, give me an honest answer on this. I think I know it anyway, but I want to check. If I found out Avro Lucille was involved in something very, very illegal, and I needed muscle to get it shut down, would Von Geller ever go for it? No chance. I took a look at the Bastion accounts last cycle. We're basically insolvent without them. But if it was a sideline, something bad for the public image, I'm wondering if they could overlook a few raids on a peripheral operation, if we somehow kept it quiet. Glovak smiled sadly. If it were me, maybe. If it were you, certainly. But that's the difference between them and us, my friend. Avro Lucille once put a contract out on a man who accidentally injured a cousin in a groundcar collision. He got him killed over nothing. It's detail. They're obsessed with it. So I'm serious. Whatever you've uncovered, it's not worth the trouble. Zidorov nodded. Much as I thought. While I'm here, though, you might as well look at this. He brought out a data slate and showed him the picked images of the off-worlder from the warehouse. This man links a couple of things I'm working on. I'm sure he works for Lucille, and I've seen him before at Bastion ceremonies, but I can't place the face and there's nothing on file. Glovak took a quick look. There wouldn't be. That's Vermeeda. Aaron Vermeeda. He's been involved in the organisation for a few years now, but he doesn't have much in the way of records. You'll have already guessed he's from off-world. Some say he's even Terran, but I think they're just guessing about that. What can you tell me about him? He's efficient, loyal. Lucille uses him for a whole range of things, mostly above board. My guess is they came into contact during the troubles with the Void Lanes. Remember all that? It's useful to know people with experience of dealing with the Chartist captains if you want to get anything off Alecto these days. Vermeeda gives him that. What about weapons? Glovak looked equivocal. Getting hold of them, you mean? He'd be able to, no doubt, even though Yorgyena's not exactly short of kit. He's got access to slate, just as you'd expect. I did hear that he had some run-in with Nomen, where he wasn't afraid to wheel out some armoured muscle. Shredder weapons, the lot. He's dangerous. Anyone with Lucille's ear is dangerous. So, if you had some material in Yorgyena, illicit material, that you needed to guard well and then get off-world, he'd be the man to do it. Undoubtedly, Glovak handed the slate back. So I'd steer clear if I were you. Well clear. It's remarkable how consistent the advice I'm getting is. If this has anything to do with your work on the Tereshovas, stay even clearer. Mordak loathes Lucille with a passion, and if he could find a way to do it, he'd kill him tomorrow. What about Udmil? No idea. Glovak thought about it for a moment, then chuckled. You know, I reckon those two might get on if they ever found themselves on the same side. They've got a similar outlook. Imagine that, said Sidorov sourly. He looked around the chamber. Hells, these people turn my stomach. How do you stand it? Glovak looked at them in turn, his eyebrow elegantly raised. Really? Oh, they're not so bad. We couldn't operate without them. They're pumped full of chems, the lot of them. They don't care where it comes from. As long as they can dial the years back, they don't care if the serums are dragged out of throne knows where. It's just sickening. Glovak gave him a warning look. Careful, keep your voice down if you want to mouth off. These people don't smash windows or mug manufacturum workers. No, they do real damage. Zidorov got up. Ignore me. The rain gets to you after a while. I'll be fine in a few weeks. Glovak stared at him with concern. Get some rest, Augusto. You need it. It's not all about work, you know. And he was right about that, at least. True enough, he said. Good thing I've got something else in mind. He'd promised himself he wouldn't go back. He'd meant it at the time, but then Glovak was right. A man needed to escape the grind just now and again, infuse the drabness of his life with something more invigorating. He knew he'd been lying to himself. Everyone had their little poison, the thing they just kept returning to, knowing the dangers,
and this was his. He had to drive quickly to make it. The light had faded fast, driven by new storms. By the time he arrived at the assigned location, it all looked so familiar. The rain-soaked Hablock was different. They were always different Hablocks, but so much was still the same as the last one he'd visited. There was even a glowing chameleon screen at the end of the access road, advertising a career in the Electo 3rd Urban Regiment, the major planetary defence levy. In the image, a brace of happy, uplifted faces marched across a parade ground, overflown by brawler gunships, and with an Imperial Guard general from one of the big regiments looking on admiringly. The rain had got behind some damaged Diades, making the general's face blink on and off erratically. The slogan at the base of the image, "The First Choice for Youth," felt deeply inaccurate. "When you're keen but not good enough for the guard," might have been better. Still, at least they were doing something, the levy. It's what they'd wanted for Naxi, since the chances of actual combat were much lower. You might end up working on civil engineering projects, putting down the odd riot or two, maybe going into a correctional facility to take out some insurrectionists, but full-scale war? No. That was for the poor saps who got shipped out off-world, into the wider galaxy, where Xenos horrors waited with sharpened fangs and luminous tentacles. Zidorov got out of the ground car, hunched against the cold drizzle, and entered the Hablock's lobby, just as he had done so many times before in so many dives. He got the same old look from the identikit guard at the desk. Once out of the elevator, he saw that the corridor had its own dark green carpet, the walls their own glossy sheen. The notice boards had two tatty papers attached, one congratulating the occupants of Unit 56 for reporting their neighbour's slackness on the work rota, a second advertising that Unit 57 was now free for allocation to a diligent family unit. Zidorov went up to the 25th floor, found the right place and pressed the chime. This time it wasn't Vastiva who opened the door, it was a man he didn't know. The man bowed, and Zidorov bowed back. He slipped inside, let the door close behind him, and was shown to a room two doors down a lightless corridor. Vastiva was waiting for him in there, sitting at a long bench. She was dressed for the occasion, a long nightshade robe clasped high at the neck, her hair tied up, her jewellery removed. She hadn't put a mask on yet. Around her, hung on pegs set along three of the walls, were bundles of clothing, either everyday workwear or robes ready to be put on in their place. It smelled of the burning spirewood candles that took him right back, straight away every time.
"I wasn't expecting you this time," Vastiva said, "when I got your call."
"I changed my mind." He pulled his wet coat off and sat down heavily next to her. "It's getting a little rough. I still need this, just to keep myself on an even track."
"Are you sickening?"
Zidorov shrugged. "Nothing Lyja couldn't fix if she was in the mood."
"You haven't told her, then, about this?"
"It's not easy." He leaned forward, rubbing his face for a moment, massaging the stiff flesh. "I mean, she's not religious, not really, but it's still heresy, isn't it?"
"She's your wife."
"I know, I know. It's not that I think she'd tell a priest. I'm sure she wouldn't. It's just... it's been a long time. Could she forgive it? Not the lying. I haven't lied, really. Just not telling her. She doesn't know anything." He smiled dryly. "She thinks it's a woman." Vastiva smiled back.
"Sorry, Zito. You're not my type."
"That's fine. I'm not my type either."
"You're a good man."
"Yeah, a fine good man." Vastiva reached out, placed a hand on top of his clenched fingers.
"Listen, remember what I told you, right at the start? It's not heresy. It's still the Emperor, just in the way he was seen on Electo before the ships came. The serpent form. There's nothing false in it. The only people who wish us harm, who wouldn't see that, are the Ministerium. And that's got nothing to do with heresy, just control."
"I know.
It's just another form of worship, another language of devotion. In a sane world, we'd be free to do it."
Zidorov stared at the floor. "You know the crazy thing? My daughter thinks I don't believe in anything. She thinks my soul's destined for the void. Hells, even Draj does. You know Draj at the Bastion? He gave me a sermon. I thought the only thing he worshipped was Retzi. And I want to scream at them sometimes. I see the crowds in the cathedrals and see them go through the motions and make the Aquila to one another, and it means nothing.
because they know they'll be sent to a re-education camp if they're not there, and that's the only reason they do it. Or they're scared, because they believe the prop vids telling them Xenos are coming for their children and want something to cling to. What's that worth, then? Just fear. But we don't fear. We live in him. I fear being discovered. It keeps me awake. Thrown, I'm a probator. So am I. I don't know how long I can keep it up. You have to tell her, then. Stop living the lie. She'll understand. She might even want to join us. Zidorov looked up at her. And what if she doesn't? I don't know. It's your choice to make, but you'll have to make it sooner or later. He thought on that. Then he took his hands from hers, removed his jacket, and reached for a robe. I'm not ready. For now I need something to fix on, something to calm me down. Vastiva stood up, straightening her robes. Tough case. They all are, he said, pulling the robes on and picking up a mask. My gut tells me there's more. I just don't know whether to keep digging. Then come inside. Seek the guidance that comes in the fire. He made himself ready. Then the two of them left the room and walked down the corridor. They entered a chamber at the very end, one that in normal times might have been a standard living unit. Seven others were already there, including the man who had let him in. They were all robed, wearing blank, empty-faced masks, their identities hidden. The lumens were out, and once Zidorov shut the door, the only light came from the iron bowl at the centre of the room. It was filled with flame, an angry red glow that seemed to dance without the aid of any fuel. The smell of spirewood was very strong. Thick black shadows slithered behind them all, driven by the play of the flames. You could almost imagine that they were made of snakes, 100 black snakes, bound together, circling the room and wriggling across its perimeter. The supplicants formed in a circle around the fire. As if sensing the completeness, the flames rose higher. One by one, they joined hands and bowed their necks. Vastiva took her place and bowed in turn. Then last of all, Zidorov did the same. The serpent rises, came the chant, first from one, then from another, then overlapping from all of them. The serpent rises, said Vastiva, squeezing Zidorov's hand. The serpent rises, he said back, feeling the fire begin to warm his soul, just as it always did. Praise be, for the serpent rises.